AgriTalk is brought to you by AGI SureTrack. Proper grain storage management leads to increased profit. With in-bin monitoring, you can hold grain, improve quality, reduce storage costs, and more. Bin Manager delivers all of that with automated bin monitoring from AGI SureTrack. It's almost like spread traders have decided to hit the reset button all at the same time in the grain markets. And today, the soy product spreaders were most active. The forecast still calls for hot temperatures and very little rain. But as we're learning, hot and dry doesn't always chase sellers out of the grain markets.
Live from the day of 7-7s via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Bill Biederman. Right after the news, Todd Bubba Horwitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Jeff Flory.
7-7, 7-21-21. 1 plus right. 3 plus 3, right? 7.
You got it. You got it.
Holy yep. mackerel. I love that. Good stuff, dude. 7-7s. I feel like I need to go to the casino after figuring that out.
I thought of it yesterday, and I was like, oh, please let me live one more day just so one I can more say day. That. Just one to more to day.
To get to the 7-7s. Love that.
That's right.
Good
That's
stuff.
Right.
How you doing, buddy?
Really, really great. Really great. Good. I had a delicious pork chop for lunch, some fresh
Again?
Cabbage and bell pepper with it.
I'm not sure there's enough pork chops in the country to keep up with your desire.
Pork is the candy of the farm, Chip. Most people don't know that. Pork is the candy of the farm. I almost feel guilty for having it for lunch.
I'm telling you, that's outstanding. Good work. Good work. I got a feeling the candy of the farm, pork, might catch on down here at the National Ag Marketing Association in meeting in Kansas City, because I think there's some barbecue fans all over the place down here that are taking advantage of some of the good stuff that's happening down here in KC. So, like I said, start of the show, the spreaders have been very active. You look at the wheat market and what's going on there. Take a look at the soy complex and the activity that happened in the soy complex. Spreaders have been very active. It's having an impact on the overall money flow in these markets. So I want to get Bill's take on that coming up. Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net. And I know Bill talks with people all over the country on a regular basis, and I want to get his take on what he thinks about the spring wheat crop, the wheat supply in general, and then we'll go through the supply side of corn and soybeans, demand side, and see what it means for price action coming up in the days and weeks ahead, at least from Bill's perspective. All right, dude, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip spread unwinding continues to be a feature in the wheat market. Traders are exiting short winter wheat and long spring wheat positions as the winter wheat crop harvest wraps up. The seasonal play is driving price action despite terrible spring wheat crop conditions and a forecast that calls for even more stress on the U.S. and Canadian spring wheat crops. Soft red winter wheat futures have closed higher in six consecutive sessions, with spring wheat futures trading solidly lower the past two sessions. September hard red wheat 8.5 cents higher, 6.68¾. September soft red up 10.25 cents to 7.10¾. September spring wheat closed at 8.97¾, down 18¼ cents today, Chip.
Yeah, a lot of movement going on in those markets right now, and it's kind of counterintuitive, but just pulling back on that harvest hedge pressure in the winter wheat market. That's that seasonal trigger that gets the traders out of the long spring, short winter wheat spreads.
Ethanol production in the weekend of July 16 averaged 1.028 million barrels per day, down 13,000 from the previous week and 11,000 barrels behind the pace seen in the same week of 2019. Ethanol stocks in the week shot up 1.384 million barrels, suggesting a slowdown in fuel consumption is sending production into storage. December corn futures came within a half cent of filling the wide July 6 downside price gap. The setback from the session highs cements the top of the gap at 573 and one half as solid overhead resistance. September corn futures unchanged, 571 and 3/4. December corn firmed 2 3/4 cents, 568 and a half. March corn, 575 and a half at the close, up 2.5 today.
We'll talk about the ethanol industry with Bill as well, but that slowdown in production and the big increase in stocks, that's a little troubling for that market going forward.
Money flow was a feature in the soy complex, with soybean meal futures solidly higher and bean oil futures sharply lower. The divergence in the product market left the bean market mixed, with the old crop futures lower and new crop futures slightly higher. The weather forecast continues to limit selling interest in soybean futures, and after volatility ramped up earlier this week, November futures posted an inside day on the daily bar chart. August bean futures 4 1/4 cents lower, 14.39 and 1/4. September beans slipped 1 1/4, 13.97 and 3/4. November bean futures closed at 13.89 and 3/4, up 1 1/4 cent.
That soybean oil market was not helped out by the decision to delay the announcements on the renewable volume obligations from EPA and the comment about political concerns over implementation of the RFS. We'll discuss that later as well.
Cotton futures continue to recover from Monday's sharp sell-off and posted an inside day with the close above the opening range. That should help limit selling interest anyway. October cotton 22 higher at 89.09. December cotton firmed 18 points, 88.69er. And on the livestock side, let me just read the closes. August live cattle 27 and a half higher, 120.05. Oct up 55 cents, 125.25. August feeders jumped a buck and a quarter, 156.77 and 1/2. And on the snout side, August lean hogs up a buck 57 and 1/2 to 106.57 and a half. December hogs gained 80 cents, 85.32 and a half. We'll pick up on that news at the bottom of the hour. Chip.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, Bubba?
What's up, Chip? How you doing, babe?
I'm doing all right. Say hey to everybody down here at Kansas City.
Kansas City, my favorite place. I can't wait to go back. I'm going to be in Missouri on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Good deal.
Nice.
Hello, everybody out there in Kansas City.
Beautiful, beautiful. So what do you like? What do you like in the markets right now?
Going out and playing golf, going to the pool. I think that, the markets are a very big of a challenge, as we talked about last week. You know, you've got everybody trying to be a weatherman and trying to figure out where we're going. In the meantime, we have a lot of volatility and light volume. And I will say this, though. I think the grains held up remarkably well when the big massive sell-off on Monday. And, of course, they have not really benefited that much from the big rallies back. But the fact that they're able to hold. So I think they found a base support level. I still believe it's going to be a big year for farmers going forward. And I think we're just going through the summer doldrums at the moment. And that's when you see lots of volatility on light volume. And you get people trying to guess which way it's going to go instead of really waiting to see what's going to happen.
All right. We haven't talked much about the livestock trade. Do you see anything there that you're liking now?
Well, I like cattle. I think, we're still slightly negative, but I'm ready to turn there, and I think that cattle looks pretty good. I think hogs are probably have run their course, and you're already seeing the much wider backwardation as we, go out to October and December. But listen, I think that the meats are going to be strong, and I think the cattle market is going to be strong going in, even though it's a little bit off season once it starts. But I think the economy is going to grow. If we don't have a shutdown, that's the only thing that could happen.
Yeah.
And, we shouldn't, but that would be the only thing that would throw a wrench into that, what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a great point right there, Bub. I sure hope we don't have to go through something like that again. Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chipper. Appreciate it, babe.
You bet. That's Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. Okay, when we come back, we've outlined a lot of the things that I want to talk about with Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net. But we're going to start with wheat supplies next, right here on AgriTalk.
AGI SureTrack's Bin Manager is the industry's leading grain bin management solution, supported by the only platform on the market to connect data points from across your operation. Soil, weather, machine, agronomic, equipment, and grain characteristic data combine to deliver a data story that drives profit and production. Mobile or desktop, stay informed, stay safe, and stay connected with AGI SureTrack. For more information, visit www.agisuretrack.com.
When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us here today. We're broadcasting live from the American, from the National Ag Marketing Association, NAMA, down here in Kansas City. It's good to see a bunch of people from the industry and see them in 3D. That's kind of what everybody's been saying. It's different to see everybody in 3D instead of those Zoom meetings that everybody has gotten so used to. Bill Biederman is with AgMarket.net. He is our guest today. Bill, welcome back to AgriTalk. How you doing, buddy?
Well, we're doing pretty good. Trying to stay cool. Got to go out, jump in the lake when we're done, I think.
I tell you, man, these hot temperatures, it's not just one area. And the thing is, the heat is, we talk about how the eastern Corn Belt's got moisture, but the heat's coming, isn't it?
You know, I'm down in Tennessee, and we've had a ton of moisture. It's like a greenhouse down here. But on the tighter soils or on the stuff that got planted wet, this heat has actually caused that corn to fire. So, you know, the heat can do a little damage even by itself, even if you got moisture.
Yeah, that's right. When we go out on crop tour and get out into Nebraska, where 60% of the corn crop is irrigated, you know, you can cover up no rain with irrigation, but you can't get rid of the heat. The heat is still there, and you still got to deal with it, and that crop still has to perform. But before we talk about corn supply and what you're hearing from across the country on this corn crop, we need to talk supply of the wheat, or wheat supply. Just simply because, Bill, I know you follow this wheat market very closely, and we haven't talked a whole lot about it. We've got the USDA estimate on spring wheat. Took a big, big slash out of that crop. But how do you feel? How do you feel about the supply of wheat this year?
Well, we've been obviously looking at it pretty closely. I mean, ratings-wise, we're the worst ever. I mean, we're certainly the worst since 2017 and 18, and then yield was down 22%. But some of these states are the worst ever on record. So it's certainly a really, really serious problem. It's not just a big problem here in the United States. It's a problem up in Canada. And trying to assess where these numbers are, Chip, is a little bit challenging.
Yeah. And then you get the World Ag Outlook Board in the last supply and demand report. Only took 500,000 tons off the Canadian spring wheat crop. There's some other government estimates, not StatsCan, but other government estimates coming out of Canada that basically aren't reflecting too much damage. Dude, when do we wake up on these numbers?
Well, okay, so here's the number game, okay? Historically speaking, a catastrophic crop is a 40% yield loss. So we think we're at about a 34%. And 34% isn't really too far away from the yield that the USDA used on the spring wheat. So maybe we lose another 10 to 20 million bushels of spring wheat here. We lose another 2 million tons out of the Canadian group. That accounts for where the yield is at. But then in September, they will change acres for abandonment. And that's where you could see, obviously you've talked to a lot of customers too. And I mean, we've got customers that are bailing it. We've got customers that are going to abandon it. We've got customers that are saying, it cost me X amount of dollars to run a combine. It's not worth it. And, you know,
grazing it, doing whatever they can.
Yeah, great. Absolutely. Yep. So that abandonment could make up for more of the loss than what we're all saying, well, yield should be lower. Well, maybe not. Maybe what's left to be harvested has still got a decent yield or we wouldn't harvest it.
Yep. Yeah, so even if we do get rid of a bunch of acres, we probably have to push that yield up. But still, it feels like the total supply of spring wheat out of the U.S. alone, it feels like it's going to come down a bit. How much of that has already been factored into the price? $9 plus spring wheat futures, Bill. I mean, that's accounted for something.
It has, and I think some of the reluctancy of the market to, you know, just blow the tops off and go back to where we've been at historically has been related to the world. But then this week, the world kind of took a turn. So, you know, we've seen a drop in the Russian production situation. We've seen a drop in the potential Argentina with the extra drought. Australia's got some issues. Europe had a fantastic crop coming on. They were kind of the savior to keep. Okay, get this. Every exporting nation is seeing a drop in ending stocks except for Europe. But Europe had problems here, and now they're starting to find out they've got some quality issues because of all the rain they've had. So, you know, this thing isn't over with yet.
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation because when you can get wheat to participate in a rally like it has, boy, they become explosive. When wheat isn't an anchor, when wheat isn't holding the other markets back, things can get crazy.
Well, you know, like I know we're not going to do a 2008 thing, but just so people do know, in 2008, Minneapolis wheat had a click at $25 a bushel.
Right.
So, you know, is it possible, like for us in-house, we're saying $11 is a very possible value.
All right.
So we're not crazy, $24, but it did happen once.
That's right. And I remember everybody, I kept saying, I am willing to sell $25 wheat in my personal account. I'm willing to do it. And people talked me out of doing it. All right.
It's like negative $40 crude, right?
Yeah, exactly. Why wouldn't you buy negative 40 crude? I get it. So with that idea or attitude about what's going on in this wheat market, how do you manage the risk with it, Bill?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you had the kind of yields that most people had in the Midwest, $90 bushel type stuff, I mean, we're trading at phenomenal prices, and a good farm manager shouldn't even be thinking market price, I want to pick the high. You should be looking at profitability and saying, hey, I want to bank this so I can do a whole lot of cool stuff next year. So that's kind of how we're looking at it, Chip. You know, sometimes it's best to just take your money, run, and don't worry about it, and let's focus on next year.
Okay. Is there much wheat being fed on the demand side?
Well, USDA's numbers for feed wheat is too high. So we're going to have to take some of that feed wheat number that they have at 180. I mean, let me just read the last 4 years. 90 million, 102, 100, and then all of a sudden they've got 180 to make up for some of the corn loss. Well, that's not going to happen now. So we're going to have to lower that and move some of that feed use back to corn.
Is that why USDA World Board got very fine-tuned with their feed and residual number on corn last month in the July S&D update and added 25 million bushels to that? It just seems ridiculous to me to add that to the old crop at this time of the year when we're talking about such a big usage category to tweak it by 25 million bushels. Are setting it up for lower wheat feed use in upcoming reports?
Yeah, I believe they are. And now that you brought up the corn numbers, I have a few, you know, problems with the corn number. That, you know, 3 years ago we fed 5.9 billion bushels of corn. Then it was 57.25, which is the number you just referred to, and they're going to keep it at 57.25 for new crop with a 4% increase in meat production. So, I mean, I don't know how you lose 200 million bushels of feed use, and now you can't feed wheat, and you're still well below 5.9, and you got 4% more cattle. It just numbers are almost like, well, let's just put it here so that we end up with a carryover. And what we're going to do is we're going to assume that the market will ration everything so it'll all work out like this. Well, the reality is this. The market can't ration if it doesn't know where it's at today. So all the private guys are saying, hey, but we don't have a 1-4 carryover today. We've got this because this is where the market's priced.
Right. You know, which is why you got to look at what's going on in the cash market. And when you get out into the feedlot areas, feed yard areas, and you've got corn trading at a premium to wheat and sorghum trading at a premium to corn, that feed market is completely upside down. And I'm going to look at the one that's right in the middle and say that's where most of our demand is going, is to that corn market for feed use.
It moved to wheat. Now it's moving right back. And all these other things, you know, like sorghum, barley, and all that stuff, the barley crop's wrecked anyway. So bottom line is there's been so much Chinese and Asian demand for these other feedstuffs that, you know, there's just not a lot available.
Yep. Okay. Good stuff, Bill. When we come back, we need to talk a little bit more about the demand side of things. Let's talk about those ethanol production and stocks numbers that we got today, that were updated today, and see what your take is on what that might mean for us going forward. All right, we're talking with Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net right here on AgriTalk.
Is winners and losers by percentage. Oats gained 0.89%, soybean meal up 1.18%, hard red wheat gained 1.29%, and soft red wheat tops gainers up 1.46%. Corn futures steady on the day. Soybean futures fell 0.29%, spring wheat dropped 1.99%, and soybean oil led declines off 2.33% today. Livestocks, live cattle firmed 0.23%. Butter gained 0.29%. Feeder cattle added 0.80%. Lean hog futures firmed 1.50%. When the pork cutout led gains in livestock up 1.91% on the day. Cheese melted 0.49%. And Class 3 milk led declines off 0.68% on the day. The winners and losers by percentage. A service of ProFarmer. Give it a look. Try ProFarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking. So
yes,
call
you
us
do.
At 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
I don't have to tell you what's on my mind, Davis. Somehow you just always seem to know.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's almost like we share a brain sometimes.
It's uncanny. It's uncanny.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I am Davis Michelson, and that is Chip Floyd. Wait. And
standing
this
by.
Is AgriTalk. Glad that you are with us today. We've got Bill Biederman with us from AgMarket.net. We'll get back to Bill right after. Wait. Davis does a recap of the markets.
Well, Chip, September hard red winter wheat, 8.5 cents higher today, 6.68¾. September spring wheat closed at 8.97¾, down 18¼ cents. September corn futures were steady at 5.71¾. March corn closed at 5.75½, up 2.5 cents. August soybean futures 4¼ cents lower, 14.39¼. November bean futures closed at 13.89¾, up 1¼ cents. And December cotton firmed 18 points to 88.69. Let's fill in the details on the livestocks. Front month live cattle futures opened slightly higher, then slipped through support at yesterday's low before recovering to close above the opening range. August live cattle, 27½ higher, 120.05. August feeders jumped a buck and a quarter, 156.77½. And finally, lean hog futures opened slightly higher and on session lows and rallied to post the highest close of the month, Chip. August lean hogs up a buck 57½ to 106.57½, and D's hogs gained 80 cents, 85.32½. There's your quick market recap. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Bill Biederman.
I knew you were going to say that.
Really?
I had a feeling.
Yep. Bill Biederman, how you doing? Let's get back to the conversation here, Bill. Davis just went through those livestock closes for us. Are you seeing anything in the livestock that when you see what's going on in the markets versus what you think should be going on in the markets really kind of isn't jiving?
Well, we're thinking that the livestock cattle are offering a pretty good opportunity going into fall, summer, or fall, winter. I suspect that the school demand and the, oh my gosh, it's Thanksgiving and Christmas, which means shopping season, which means I better take my wife out and romance her because we've been stuck in the house for a long time. And that means I'm going to take her out for a really good seafood dinner, and I'm going to eat a ton of beef. So, you know, I mean, reality is these cattle are a 120 to 130 market is okay. Not overpriced. I mean, that's pretty fair value given everything else. And we're at the lower end of that. So, you know, yep. I'd be buying.
Okay.
I'd tell everybody right. to buy so I can make some money when it goes up.
Yeah, good stuff. I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. Feels like that June swoon that we saw in the hog market was just a bit overdone to the downside, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was massively overdone, and hopefully we'll be right back up and challenging those highs here within the next month. I don't personally trade hogs anymore just because of the way the industry has changed, but from a technical perspective, you know, the trend is up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the ethanol production numbers that we got today, Bill, they seemed a little bit, disappointing to me, I guess. Our weekly production average down 13,000 barrels per day, and then we had that big increase, more than a million barrel increase in ethanol stocks on the week. Is it just 1 week, or is that the start of something that's going to be a little more consistent?
Well, you know, we're going into a season here where buying grain is getting more and more difficult. We just heard $1.30 over the SEP traded today for July ship at okay. St. Louis. CBG is the buyer, and there's a lot of competition to buy corn. So when you're paying $1.30 to $1, I've even heard $1.70 over the other day. That's a pretty high price, and your margins are going to retract. And the market's doing its job, you know, to try to ration some of this out. So we're seeing some plants schedule some closing for maintenance and things like that. We would suspect okay. this would happen. But, Chip, the good news is this. I mean, we're still using more than what USDA, what we need to use in order to meet USDA. So we're still running above that, which means the USDA's target on the balance sheet is not only achievable, but if we end up the way we think, we're probably going to be another 50 million bushels of usage in that old crop corn than what wow. USDA is saying. That'll bring your carryover down a smidge, closer to a billion bushel.
Okay. All right, closer to a billion bushels on the carry. How much of an influence or how much of a impact does that have on your new crop spreadsheet then, Bill?
Significant. So yeah. what's happening now is with a 179.5 yield, I think that's achievable. I mean, that's three bushels above the previous record, and I know we got a good crop out there for a lot of areas, but let's just say that is achievable. You're going to keep carryover right at 1.1. But here's the thing. We have got it so tight now, Chip, that any two-bushel change, that's all I'm saying. Two bushels is I mean, you can be wrong by two bushels and still be right. But if they swing it two bushels down, that's a big difference. Now you're going to drop mm-hmm. below a billion. Now anything below a billion is a rationing situation. And so here's another thing that, you know, they have like exports at 2.5 billion. Well, this yeah. year, the year we're finishing is going to be 2.85, and honestly, 2.9 is likely. And if you look at what's going on in Brazil, Chip, this is an amazing story that hardly anybody's talking about right now. But this Brazilian situation could shift 400 or 500 million more bushels of demand around the world to somebody who can supply it. That's a lot.
Yeah, Bill, the one thing that I don't hear people talking about, and we've talked about it a few times here on the show, is number one, the late plantings, number two on the Safrina corn crop, number two, the stage of development on that crop, and it keeps getting frosted and frozen.
Right. I mean, there are some estimates that are sub 80 now, Chip, but we're not there. But the number that we're at calculates out to, I believe it's 383 up to 500 million bushel more demand shift to U.S., which means our demand for exports next year, instead of 2.5, it's probably closer to 3.
Yeah. I'm not going to argue with you. I don't know if we can get all the way to 3, but it's sure not 2.5.
No,
I agree there.
And last year, just to give the audience a little perspective, they did the same thing last year. They started out with export number of 2.150, and right now we're at 2.850. They've had, I think, seven revisions, and now we're 700 million bushel more than where they started. And to go think you're going to go down to 2.5 in this environment with Brazil having problems, it is not going to happen.
And China building that hog herd back and everything, it I don't know if it makes a lot of sense or not. Yeah. So I got to go back to biofuels for a second because of the beating that the soybean oil market took today. Was that tied to the, you know, political concern over implementation of the RFS?
Yes, but the weird part about this whole thing is, I mean, if you think of this from a lot, I think a lot of ignorant people are trading. When I say ignorant, I mean they're really smarter than I am, but they're not very smart about our industry because they trade computer stuff.
Yep.
Reality is this, you know, the biodiesel is what they were talking about, and the renewable diesel is what we're trending towards because that's so much more carbon friendly. And the renewable, it's a 1-to-1 blend. So, you know, I mean, if that's the direction we're going, that's going to blow demand up to the good side for agriculture if that's the way we're going. But, you know, the big bill, the wordage of that, verbiage of that bill was focused on biodiesel, which is the blend.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and that renewable diesel, good grief, just changing the process and off it goes because it uses the same feedstocks that they do for biodiesel and with the way that market has been built up.
So a lot more of it, and it's way more carbon friendly. It's just, to me, it's the way we're headed, And you know, with the new tests that that they're doing with these semis out west, these big fleets with the Cummins engines, I mean, it could be a game changer.
Yep. So I'm here at NAMA in Kansas City, and someone made the point about it's amazing how consumers, when they hear stuff about biodiesel and renewable diesel and the price of diesel fuel and everything, they think to themselves, boy, I'm glad that I don't drive a diesel vehicle. And they don't connect the dots that just about everything that they're consuming from that grocery store got there by way of a diesel engine. So it's all of those costs. Don't just stop with, that's not what I burn in my vehicle. Connect all the dots and figure out exactly where those costs come in and how it has an impact on you. And once you realize it, then you start really paying attention to all of this stuff, Bill, and it's pretty fascinating. I only got 30 seconds left. Doesn't sound like you want to be too aggressive on 21 crop marketings at this point.
We're about 50% sold, but we do have options bought against that, so we're in that flexible plan. You know, we're hoping that we get another push through here on this weather, and we might get a little bit more sold, but we're not in too big a hurry until next spring when we're fighting for acres.
Here we are, knocking on the door, we're at pollination, and you're right on schedule with your marketing, wouldn't you say?
We're really comfortable with it. Actually, if we get through this heat, we'll probably sell off those options and just have our 50% net sold at a phenomenal price. But, yeah, we're going to have a good crop out there, and we're excited about that. Beans are a question mark.
Yeah, we still need quite a bit of time to figure that one out. Great conversation, Bill. Thank you so much, man.
You bet. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. We'll talk to you again here real soon. Bill Biederman, agmarket.net. Okay, when we come back, I got a feeling Davis has got a few highlights to pull. I think I know that because I think we share the same brain.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis Michelson speaking from a brain so complex, scientists have not yet even begun to study it. A brain so voluminous, so enormous, it fits in the heads of two grown men.
And you don't want them studying it while we're still using it, okay?
No, we've got plans for this brain.
Study and brain, to me, turns into dissection, and I don't want any of that.
Well, and I think the grim reality is that Farm Journal only wanted to pay for one brain. So
that's
like, why don't you guys just split it? Just split
it. Exactly. That's why we got to share a bank account.
Well, I'm so glad, beloved listener, that you've tuned in. Welcome back to AgriTalk. When I'm thinking back over this conversation with Bill Biederman, AgMarket.net.
Yes.
There were a number of items that paint quite the demand picture for corn. And maybe maybe this shouldn't be surprising. I don't know. He talked about corn re-winning a certain amount of feed demand, pulling that back away from wheat. And then we, you know, because we had talked also about, well, there's alternative feeds out there that they'll use. But he sort of suggested demand from Asia and other places has diminished those supplies as well. And that puts corn square in the demand bullseye. And then the stuff he was saying about Brazil, and he's right, dude.
Yeah.
Freeze, and then too much heat, and then, you know, this, and then that, and then this, and then that. 1,000 paper cuts on the Brazilian crop.
Yep. Right.
That paints quite the demand story. And then, just to throw on that, if we say, well, I don't know, the futures aren't really doing much lately, the cash market doesn't lie, what was he saying about basis?
Oh, that's the basis is $1.30 over the board in the last transaction. I mean, yeah, they're having to pay up for it. So basically, this is going to go back to a conversation that you and I had. It wasn't that long ago. I think it was sometime last week. When you look at corn production around the globe, for at least the last 4 years, we've consumed more than we've produced. The biggest reason for that is because when it comes to feed, corn is the first thing that every feed maker looks to. Okay, now then you start to push prices up a little bit and they start to look to the alternatives. Well, once you've exhausted the alternatives on it and the prices on the alternatives then all of a sudden don't look so attractive anymore, that's when you go back to corn, even if corn is still high priced. That's why, as we've explained, corn demand is not as sensitive to price as it once was. So the inelasticity of demand for corn is really showing through right now. That's why our ethanol guys are bidding, I shouldn't say ethanol guys. The ethanol guys aren't bidding $1.30 over, and that's why we're starting to see that pullback in production, because all of a sudden we're into the last two months of the marketing year, and you've heard me say this before, why bid for something that you can't buy? Because it just isn't there. You get into some of those areas that are ethanol intensive, and the corn the old crop corn supplies just aren't there. I mean, you might be able to move some for that $1.30 over the board bid, but I don't know how much of it you're going to move. So bottom line is corn first, alternatives in the middle. You always end up coming back to corn. That's why there's inelasticity in demand, and that's why we are consuming more around the globe than we're producing.
And quickly, give me 20 seconds on this. The broiler is on over corn country right now and looks to be for the next few weeks here. And I've got September futures unchanged, the D's up 2.75 today. Traders keeping their powder dry. What's the deal with futures?
I think, you know, it's 570 D's corn.
This has been
accounted for now. Your bill say, you know, 179.5, is it possible for a national average yield? Well, that's trend line. At this point, you have to say that it's still a possibility. Is it in the bin? No way. Is there downside risk? Absolutely.
I got to ask you about something else. Change gears.
Yeah.
What's this I hear about you predicting corn and soybean yields above trend line? Corn and soybean yields above trend line? Yeah. There's a whole headline thing out.
I know where that is coming from. Okay,
help
so
me.
I write a column for Farm Journal magazine as well.
Right.
And we take a look at some of the most important things that I think that we should be thinking about at any, you know, on a monthly basis. Well, everybody is thinking, okay, it's trend line or lower on corn yields, trend line or lower on bean yields. Well, we've talked about the canoe many times, Davis, and when everybody gets loaded on the damn thing onto one side, it typically tips over. I'm not predicting. I am not predicting above trend line corn and soybean yields. I did ask the question, though, what if yields top trend? And then I went through the usage and the and where we would end up on carryover and what it might mean for price. Basically said, listen, if somehow, some way, everything all averages out in the end and the weather forecast is wrong, and we get to 185 on corn for a national average yield, get to 53 bushels per acre on beans, yes, prices would be lower than what we're seeing right now. But the bottom line that I put on that on the column is that, but even if that happens, it's not like everybody's balance sheet is going to be stained with red ink. It's still a profitable situation going forward. And I am not predicting above trend. I'm just asking the question and going through the exercise and examining what might happen if that would happen. You because, know, like I said, everybody's loaded up.
With a brain like this, you're bound to get an academic, intellectual exercise come out of it every once in a while.
Every now and then.
It's refreshing, actually, is what it is.
Can't really help it. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day has got the above normal temperatures for both the 6 and the 8 to 14 day outlook. Some normal precip is starting to slip into the eastern belt, just like we talked about this morning with the guys from BAMWX. So they're talking about some moisture breaking through, but boy, the west, the Iowa, and the western corn belt still stays with the below normal precipitation. Thanks for listening. Join us tomorrow morning. We've got GT Thompson and Brian Jennings from ACE.